You did a good job with that cubist sketch, he says. I don't know what to say. We pass a dead dog. It doesn't have a collar. I'm seeing a lot of growth in your work. You are learning more than you know. Me. I don't know anything. My trees suck. Mr. Freeman puts on his turn signal, looks in the rearview mirror, pulls into the left lane, and passes a beer truck. Don't be so hard on yourself. Art is about making mistakes and learning from them. He pulls back into the right lane. I watch the beer truck fade into the snowstorm in the side mirror. Part of me thinks maybe he's driving a bit too fast, what with all the snow, but the car is heavy and doesn't slip. The snow that had caked on my socks melts into my sneakers. Me. All right, but you said we had to put emotion into our art. I don't know what that means. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel. My fingers fly up and cover my mouth. What am I doing? Mr. Freeman. Art without emotion is like chocolate cake without sugar. It makes you gag. He sticks his finger down his throat. The next time you work on your trees, don't think about trees. Think about love, or hate, or joy, or rage, whatever makes you feel something. Makes your palms sweat, or your toes curl. Focus on that feeling. When people don't express themselves, they die one piece at a time. You'd be shocked at how many adults are really dead inside, walking through their days with no idea who they are, just waiting for a heart attack or cancer or a Mack truck to come along and finish the job. It's the saddest thing I know. He pulls off the exit and stops at the light at the bottom of the ramp. Something small and furry and dead is crumpled by the storm sewer. I chew off a scab on my thumb. The effort sign blinks in the middle of the block. Over there, I say. You can drop me off in front. We sit for a moment, the snow hiding the other side of the street, a cello solo thrumming from the speakers. Thanks, I say. Don't mention it. He answers. If you ever need to talk, you know where to find me. I unbuckle the seatbelt and open the door. Melinda, Mr. Freeman says. Snow filters into the car and melts on the dashboard. You're a good kid. I think you have a lot to say. I'd like to hear it. I close the door. Hall of Mirrors. I stop by the manager's office, and the secretary says my mother is on the phone. Just as well. It will be easier to find a pair of jeans without her around. I head for the young ladies section of the store. Another reason they don't make any money. Who wants to be called a young lady? I need a size 10, as much as it kills me to admit that. Everything I own is an 8 or a small. I look at my canoe feet and my wet, obnoxious ankle bones. Aren't girls supposed to stop growing at this age? When I was in 6th grade, my mom bought me all these books about puberty and adolescence so I would appreciate what a beautiful and natural and miraculous transformation I was going through. Crap. That's what it is. She complains all the time about her hair turning gray and her butt sagging and her skin wrinkling, but I'm supposed to be grateful for a face full of zits, hair in embarrassing places, and feet that grow an inch a night? Utter crap. No matter what I try on, I know I'll hate it. Efforts has cornered the market on completely unfashionable clothes. Clothes that grandmas buy for your birthday. It's a fashion graveyard. Just get a pair that fits, I tell myself. One pair, that's the goal. I look around. No mom. I carry 3 pairs of the least offensive jeans into the dressing room. I'm the only person trying anything on. The first pair is way too small. I can't even get them over my butt. I don't bother with the second pair. They are a smaller size. The third pair is huge. Exactly what I'm looking for. I scurry out to the 3-way mirror. With an extra-large sweatshirt over the top, you can hardly tell that they're Effort's jeans. Still no mom. I adjust the mirror so I can see reflections of reflections. Miles and miles of me and my new jeans. I hook my hair behind my ears. I should have washed it. My face is dirty. I lean into the mirror. Eyes after eyes after eyes stare back at me. Am I in there somewhere? 1,000 eyes blink. No makeup. Dark circles. I pull the side flaps of the mirror in closer, folding myself into the looking glass and blocking out the rest of the store. My face becomes a Picasso sketch, my body slicing into dissecting cubes. I saw a movie once where a woman was burned over 80% of her body, and they had to wash all the dead skin off. They wrapped her in bandages, kept her drugged, and waited for skin grafts. They actually sewed her into a new skin. I push my ragged mouth against the mirror. 1,000 bleeding, crusted lips push back. What does it feel like to walk in a new skin? Was she completely sensitive like a baby, or numb without nerve endings, just walking in a skin bag? I exhale, and my mouth disappears in a fog. I feel like my skin has been burned off. I stumble from thornbush to thornbush. My mother and father who hate each other, Rachel who hates me, a school that gags on me like I'm a hairball, and Heather. I just need to hang on long enough for my new skin to graft. Mr. Freeman thinks I need to find my feelings. How can I not find them? They are chewing me alive like an infestation of thoughts, shame, mistakes. I squeeze my eyes shut. Jeans that fit, that's a good start. I have to stay away from the closet, go to all my classes. I will make myself normal. Forget the rest of it. Germination. We finish the plant unit in biology. Ms. Keen drops 10-pound hints that the test will focus on seeds. I study. How seeds get planted. This is actually cool. Some plants spit their seeds into the wind. Others make seeds yummy enough for birds to eat so they get pooped out on passing cars. Plants make way more seeds than they need because they know that life is not perfect and all the seeds won't make it. Kind of smart when you think about it. People used to do that too. Have 12 or 15 kids because they figured some would die, some would turn out rotten, and a couple would be hard-working, honest farmers who knew how to plant seeds. What seeds need to germinate? Seeds are inefficient. If the seed is planted too deep, it doesn't warm up at the right time. Plant it too close to the surface and a crow eats it. Too much rain and the seed molds. Not enough rain and it never gets started. Even if it does manage to sprout, it can be choked by weeds, rooted up by a dog, mashed by a soccer ball, or asphyxiated by car exhaust. It's amazing anything survives. How plants grow. Quickly. Most plants grow fast and die young. People get 70 years. A bean plant gets 4 months, maybe 5. Once the itty-bitty baby plant peeks out of the ground, it sprouts leaves so it can absorb more sun. Then it sleeps, eats, and sunbathes until it's ready to flower. A teenage plant. This is a bad time to be a rose or a zinnia or a marigold, because people attack with scissors and cut off what's pretty. But plants are cool. If the rose is picked, the plant grows another one. It needs to bloom to produce more seeds. I am going to ace this test. Bologna exile. My cafeteria strategy has changed since I have no friends in the known universe. First off, I don't go through the line for anything to avoid that vulnerable moment of coming out into the lunchroom, that moment when every head lifts and evaluates, friend, enemy, or loser. So I brown bag it. I had to write a note to my mother, asking her to buy lunch bags, bologna, and little containers of applesauce. The note made her happy. She came home from the store with all kinds of junk food I could take. Maybe I should start talking to them. Maybe a little bit. But what if I say the wrong thing? Bologna girl. That's me. I try to read while eating alone, but the noise gets between my eyes and the page, and I can't see through it. I observe. I pretend I'm a scientist, on the outside looking in, the way Ms. Keen describes her days watching rats get lost in mazes. The Marthas don't look lost. They sit in formation, a new girl in my old seat, a sophomore who just moved here from Oregon. Her clothes have a dangerously high percentage of polyester. She needs to get that taken care of. They nibble carrot sticks and olives, spread pate onto stone-ground wheat crackers, and trade bites of goat cheese. Meg and Emily and Heather drink cranberry apricot juice. Too bad I can't buy stock in the juice company. I am watching a trend in the making. Are they talking about me? They're certainly laughing enough. I chomp my sandwich and it barfs mustard on my shirt. Maybe they're planning the next project. They could mail snowballs to the weather-deprived children in Texas. They could knit goat hair blankets for shorn sheep. I imagine what Heather might look like in 10 years after 2 children and 70 pounds. It helps a little. Rachel Rochelle takes a seat at the end of my table with Hannah, the exchange student from Egypt. Rachel Rochelle is now experimenting with Islam. She wears a scarf on her head and some brown and red gauzy harem pants. Her eyes are ringed with black eyeliner thick as crayon. I think I see her looking at me, but I'm probably wrong. Hannah wears jeans and a Gap t-shirt. They eat hummus and pita and titter in French. There is a sprinkling of losers like me scattered among the happy teenagers, prunes in the oatmeal of school. The others have the social power to sit with other losers. I'm the only one sitting alone, under the glowing neon sign which reads, "Complete and total loser, not quite sane, stay away, do not feed." I go to the restroom to turn my shirt around so the mustard stain is hidden under my hair. Snow day. School as usual. We had 8 inches of snow last night. In any other part of the country, that would mean a snow day. Not in Syracuse. We never get snow days. It snows an inch in South Carolina, everything shuts down and they get on the 6 o'clock news. In our district, they plow early and often and put chains on the bus tires. Hair woman tells us they canceled school for a whole week back in the 70s because of the energy crisis. It was wicked cold and would have cost too much to heat the school. She looks wistful. Wistful, 1-point vocab word. She blows her nose loudly and pops another smelly green cough drop. The wind blasts a snowdrift against the window. Our teachers need a snow day. They look unusually pale. The men aren't shaving carefully, and the women never remove their boots. They suffer some sort of teacher flu. Their noses drip, their throats gum up, their eyes are rimmed with red. They come to school long enough to infect the staff room, then go home sick when the sub shows up. Hair woman. Open your books now. Who can tell me what snow symbolized to Hawthorne? Class. Groan. Hawthorne wanted snow to symbolize cold. That's what I think. Cold and silence. Nothing quieter than snow. The sky screams to deliver it, 100 banshees flying on the edge of the blizzard. But once the snow covers the ground, it hushes as still as my heart. Stupid, stupid. I sneak into my closet after school, because I can't face the idea of riding home on a bus full of sweaty, smiling teeth sucking up my oxygen. I say hello to my poster of Maya in my cubist tree. My turkey bone sculpture has fallen down again. I prop it up on the shelf next to the mirror. It slides back down and lies flat. I leave it there and curl up in my chair. The closet is warm and I'm ready for a nap. I've been having trouble sleeping at home. I wake up because the covers are on the floor or because I'm standing at the kitchen door trying to get out. It feels safer in my little hideaway. I doze off. I wake to the sound of girls screaming, "Be aggressive, be aggressive, B-E-A-G-G-R-E-S-S-I-V-E. For a minute there, I think that I've tripped into the land of the truly insane. But then a crowd roars. It is a basketball game, last game of the season. I check my watch. 8:45. I've been asleep for hours. I grab my backpack and fly down the hall. The noise of the gym pulls me in. I stand by the door for the last minute of the game. The crowd chants down the last seconds like it's New Year's Eve, then explode from the stands like angry hornets at the sound of the buzzer. We won, beating the Coatesville Cougars 51-50. The cheerleaders weep. The coaches embrace. I get caught up in the excitement and clap like a little girl. This is my mistake, thinking I belong. I should have bolted for home immediately. But I don't. I hang around. I want to be a part of it all. David Petrakis pushes towards the doors in the middle of a group of friends. He sees me looking at him and detaches himself from his pod. David.
Melinda, where were you sitting? Did you see that last shot? Unbelievable. Unbe-freaking-lievable.
He dribbles an imaginary ball on the ground, fakes left, right, then pulls up for a shot. David should stick to human rights abuses. He goes on and on, a loose ball racing downhill. To hear him talk, you'd think they'd just won the NBA championship. Then he invites me back to his house for celebratory pizza.
David. Come on, Mel, you gotta come with us. My dad told me to bring anyone I wanted. We can give you a ride home after if you want. It'll be fun. You do remember fun, don't you?
Nope. I don't do parties. No thanks. I trot out excuses. Homework, strict parents, tuba practice, late-night dentist appointment, have to feed the warthogs. I don't have a good track record with parties. David doesn't bother to analyze my reluctance. If he were a girl, maybe he would have pleaded or whined more. Guys don't do that. Yes, no, stay, go, suit yourself. See you Monday. I think it's some kind of psychiatric disorder when you have more than one personality in your head. That's what it feels like when I walk home. The two Melindas fight every step of the way. Melinda 1 is pissed that she couldn't go to the party. Melinda 1. Get a life. It was just pizza. He wasn't going to try anything. His parents were going to be there. You worry too much. You're never going to let us have any fun, are you? You're going to turn into one of those weird old ladies who has 100 cats and calls the cops when kids cut across her backyard. I can't stand you. Melinda 2 waits for 1 to finish her tantrum. 2 carefully watches the bushes along the sidewalk for a lurking boogeyman, or worse. Melinda 2. The world is a dangerous place. You don't know what would have happened. What if he was just saying his parents were going to be there? He could have been lying. You can never tell when people are lying. Assume the worst. Plan for disaster. Now hurry up and get us home. I don't like it out here. It's too dark. If I kick them both out of my head, who would be left? A Night to Remember. I can't sleep after the game. Again. I spend a couple hours tuning AM radio to the weird bounces of night. I listen to Jabber Jabber from Quebec, a farm report from Minnesota, and a country station in Nashville. I crawl out my window onto the porch roof and wrap myself in all my blankets. A fat white seed sleeps in the sky. Slush is frozen over. People say that winter lasts forever, but it's because they obsess over the thermometer. North in the mountains, the maple syrup is trickling. Brave geese punch through the thin ice left on the lake. Underground, pale seeds roll over in their sleep, starting to get restless, starting to dream green. The moon looked closer back in August. Rachel got us to the end of summer party, a cheerleader party, with beer and seniors and music. She blackmailed her brother, Jimmy, to drive us. We were all sleeping over at Rachel's house. Her mother thought Jimmy was taking us roller skating. It was at a farm a couple of miles from our development. The kegs were in the barn where the speakers were set up. Most people hung at the edge of the lights. They looked like models in a blue jeans ad. Thin, thin, thin. Big lips, big earrings, white smiles. I felt like such a little kid. Rachel found a way to fit in, of course. She knew a lot of people because of Jimmy. I tasted a beer. It was worse than cough medicine. I gulped it down. Another beer, and one more. Then I worried I would throw up. I walked out of the crowd toward the woods. The moon shone on the leaves. I could see the lights, like stars strung in the pines. Somebody giggled, hidden beyond the dark, quiet boy-girl whispers. I couldn't see them. A step behind me. A senior. And then he was talking to me, flirting with me. This gorgeous cover model guy. His hair was way better than mine. His every inch a tanned muscle.
and he had straight white teeth. Flirting with me. Where was Rachel? She had to see this. Greek god. Where did you come from? You're too beautiful to hide in the dark. Come dance with me. He took my hand and pulled me close to him. I breathed in cologne and beer and something I couldn't identify. I fit in against his body perfectly, my head level with his shoulder. I was a little dizzy. I laid my cheek on his chest. He wrapped one arm around my back. His other hand slid down to my butt. I thought that was a little rude, but my tongue was thick with beer and I couldn't figure out how to tell him to slow down. The music was sweet. This was what high school was supposed to feel like. Where was Rachel? She had to see this. He tilted my face up to his. He kissed me. Man kiss. Hard, sweet, and deep. Nearly knocked me off my feet, that kiss. And I thought, for just a minute there, that I had a boyfriend. I would start high school with a boyfriend, older and stronger and ready to watch out for me. He kissed me again. His teeth ground hard against my lips. It was hard to breathe. A cloud cloaked the moon. Shadows looked like photo negatives. "Do you want to?" he asked. What did he say? I didn't answer. I didn't know. I didn't speak. We were on the ground. When did that happen? No! No, I did not like this. I was on the ground and he was on top of me. My lips mumble something about leaving, about a friend who needs me, about my parents worrying. I can hear myself. I'm mumbling like a deranged drunk. His lips lock on mine and I can't say anything. I twist my head away. He is so heavy. There's a boulder on me. I open my mouth to breathe, to scream, and his hand covers it. In my head, my voice is as clear as a bell. No, I don't want to. But I can't spit it out. I'm trying to remember how we got on the ground, and where the moon went, and wham! Shirt up, shorts down, and the ground smells wet and dark, and no. I'm not really here. I'm definitely back at Rachel's, crimping my hair and gluing on fake nails, and he smells like beer and mean, and he hurts me, hurts me, hurts me. And gets up, and zips his jeans, and smiles. The next thing I saw was the telephone. I stood in the middle of a drunken crowd and I called 911 because I needed help. All those visits from Officer Friendly in second grade paid off. A lady answered the phone. Police, state your emergency. And I saw my face in the window over the kitchen sink, and no words came out of my mouth. Who was that girl? I had never seen her before. Tears oozed down my face, over my bruised lips, pooling on the handset. It's okay, said the nice lady on the phone. We have your location. Officers are on the way. Are you hurt? Are you being threatened? Someone grabbed the phone from my hands and listened. A scream. The cops were coming. Blue and cherry lights flashing in the kitchen sink window. Rachel's face, so angry, in mine. Someone slapped me. I crawled out of the room through a forest of legs. Outside, the moon smiled goodbye and slipped away. I walked home to an empty house, without a word. It isn't August. The moon is asleep and I'm sitting on my porch roof like a frozen gargoyle, wondering if the sun is going to blow off the world today and sleep in. There's blood on the snow. I bit my lip clear through. It needs stitches. Mom will be late again. I hate winter. I've lived in Syracuse my whole life, and I hate winter. It starts too early and ends too late. No one likes it. Why does anyone stay here? My report card. Social life, F. Lunch, D. Clothes, F. Social studies, F. Biology, D+. English, D+. Spanish, D. Algebra, F. Gym, D. Art, A. Fourth marking period. Exterminators. The PTA has started a petition to get rid of the hornet as our school mascot. It was the cheer that got to them. They heard it at the last basketball game. We are the hornets, horny, horny hornets. Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are. So we tell them, we are the hornets, horny, horny hornets. And on and on and on. The wiggles and shakes that accompany the cheer freaked out the Meriwether PTA. Freaked out PTAs all over the city when the horny hornet cheer was televised. The TV sports guy thought the song was cute, so he did a segment showing the hornet hustle, with the cheerleaders shaking their stingers, and the crowd bumping and grinding their horny hornet hinies. The student council started a counter-petition. The Honor Society wrote it. It describes the psychological harm we have all suffered from this year's lack of identity. It pleads for consistency, stability. It's pretty good. We, the students of Meriwether High, have become proud of our hornet selves. We are tenacious, stinging, clever. We are a hive, a community of students. Don't take away our hornetdom. We are hornets. It won't be a real issue until football starts up again. Our baseball team always stinks. The wet season. Spring is on the way. The winter rats, rusty brown $700 cars that everyone with sense drives from November until April, are rolling back into storage. The snow is melting for good, and the pretty baby shiny cars glitter in the senior parking lot. There are other signs of spring. Front lawns cough up the shovels and mittens that were gobbled by snowdrifts in January. My mother moved the winter coats up to the attic. Dad's been mumbling about the storm windows, but hasn't taken them down. From the bus I saw a farmer walking his field, waiting for the mud to tell him when to plant. April Fool's Day is when most seniors get their acceptance or rejection letters from college. Thumbs up or thumbs down. It's a sick piece of timing. Tensions are running high. Kids drink pink stomach medicine from the bottle. David Petrakis, my lab partner, is writing a database program to track who got in where. He wants to analyze which advanced placement classes the seniors took, their standardized test scores, extracurriculars, and GPAs to figure out what he needs to do to get into Harvard. I've been going to most of my classes. Good girl, Melly. Roll over, Melly. Sit, Melly. No one has patted me on the head, though. I passed an algebra test. I passed an English test. I passed a biology test. Well, hallelujah. It is also profoundly stupid. Maybe this is why kids join clubs, to give them something to think about during class. Andy Beast joined the International Club. I hadn't figured him for a deep interest in Greek cooking or French museums. He has abandoned the Martha table and hangs around and onto Rachel Rochelle and Greta Ingrid and all the other resident aliens. Rachel Rochelle flutters her purple eyelashes at him like he's some kind of Uber dude. You'd think she'd have more sense. Easter came and went without much notice. I think it caught my mother by surprise. She doesn't like Easter because the date keeps shifting and it's not a big shopping holiday. When I was a kid, Mom used to hide colored eggs for me all over the house. The last egg was inside a big basket of chocolate rabbits and yellow marshmallow chicks. Before my grandparents died, they would take me to church and I would wear stiff dresses with itchy lace. This year we celebrated by eating lamb chops. I made hard-boiled eggs for lunch and drew little faces on them with a black pen. Dad complained about how much yard work has to be done. Mom didn't say much. I said less. In heaven, my grandparents frowned. I sort of wished we had gone to church. Some of the Easter songs are pretty. Spring break. It is the last day of spring break. My house is shrinking, and I feel like Alice in Wonderland. Afraid that my head might burst through the roof, I head for the mall. I have $10 in my pocket. What to spend it on? French fries. $10 worth of French fries. Ultimate fantasy. If Alice in Wonderland were written today, I bet she'd have a supersized order of fries that said, "Eat me," instead of a small cake. On the other hand, we're rushing towards summer, which means shorts and t-shirts, and maybe even a bathing suit now and then. I walk past the deep-fat fryers. Now that spring has passed, the fall fashions are in the store windows. I keep waiting for the year when the fashions catch up to the seasons. A couple of stores have performance artists hanging at the front door. One guy keeps flying a stupid loop-the-loop airplane. A plastic-faced woman keeps tying and retying a shawl. No, now it's a skirt. Now it's a halter top. Now it's a headscarf. People avoid looking at her as if they aren't sure if they should applaud or tip her. I feel bad for her. I wonder what her grades were in high school. I want to give her a tip, only it would be rude to ask if she has changed for a 10. I ride the escalator down to the central fountain, where today's entertainment is face painting. The line is long and loud, 6-year-olds and their mothers. A little girl walks past me. She's a tiger. She's crying about ice cream and she wipes her tears. Her tiger paint smears and her mom yells at her. What a zoo! I turn. Ivy is sitting on the edge of the fountain, a giant sketchbook balanced on her knees. She nods toward the line of whiners and the face painters furiously coloring stripes, spots, and whiskers. I feel bad for them, I say. What are you drawing? Ivy moves so I can sit next to her and hands me the sketchbook. She's drawing the kids' faces. Half of each face is plain and sad. The other half is plastered with thick clown makeup that is fake happy. She hasn't painted any tigers or leopards. The last time I was here, they were doing clown faces. No such luck today, Ivy explains. Looks good, though, I say. It's kind of spooky. Not creepy, but unexpected. I hand back the sketchbook. Ivy pokes her pencil into her bun. Good, that's what I'm trying for. That turkey bone thing you did was creepy, too. Creepy in a good way. Good creepy. It's been months and I'm still thinking about it. What am I supposed to say now? I bite my lip, then release it. I pull a roll of lifesavers from my pocket. One apiece? She takes one, I take three, and we suck in silence for a moment. How's the tree coming? She asks. I groan. Stinks. It was a mistake to sign up for art. I just couldn't see myself taking woodshop. You're better than you think you are, Ivy says. She opens to an empty page in the sketchbook. I don't know why you keep using a linoleum block. If I were you, I'd just let it out. Draw. Here, try a tree. We sit there trading pencils. I draw a trunk. Ivy adds a branch. I extend the branch, but it's too long and spindly. I start to erase it, but Ivy stops me. It's fine the way it is. It just needs some leaves. Layer the leaves and make them slightly different sizes and it will look great. You have a great start there. She's right. Genetics. The last unit of the year in biology is genetics. It's impossible to listen to Ms. Keene. Her voice sounds like a cold engine that won't turn over. The lecture starts with some priest named Greg who studied vegetables and ends up with an argument about blue eyes. I think I missed something. How did we leap from veggies to eye color? I'll copy David's notes. I flip ahead in the textbook. There's an interesting chapter about acid rain. Nothing about sex. We aren't scheduled to learn about that until 11th grade. David draws a chart in his notebook. I snap my pencil point and walk to the front of the room to sharpen it. I figure the walk will do me good. Ms. Keene sputters on. We get half our genes from our mother and half from our father. I thought my genes came from efforts. Ha ha, biology joke. Mom says I take after Dad's side of the family. They're mostly cops and insurance salesmen who bet on football games and smoke disgusting cigars. Dad says I take after Mom's side of the family. They're farmers who grow rocks and poison ivy. They don't say much, visit dentists, or read. When I was a little kid, I used to pretend I was a princess who had been adopted when my kingdom was overrun by bad guys. Any day, my real parents, Mr. King and Mrs. Queen, would send the royal limo to pick me up. I just about had a 7-year-old heart attack when my dad took a limo to the airport the first time. I thought they had really come to take me away, and I didn't want to go. Dad took taxis after that. I look out the window. No limos. No chariots or carriages. Now, when I really want to leave, no one will give me a ride. I sketch a willow tree drooping into the water. I won't show it to Mr. Freeman. This one is for my closet. I've been taping some of my drawings on the walls. Any more classes as boring as this one, and I'll be ready to move back in there full time. My leaves are good. Natural. The trick is to make them different sizes and then crowd them one on top of the other. Ivy was right. Ms. Keene writes, dominant recessive, on the board. I look at David's notes. He's drawing a family tree. David got his hair gene from his dad and his eye gene from his mom. I draw a family tree. A family stump. There aren't that many of us. I can barely remember their names. Uncle Jim, Uncle Thomas, Aunt Mary, Aunt Kathy. There's another aunt. She is very recessive. She recessed herself all the way to Peru. I think I have her eyes. I got my, I don't want to know about it, gene from my dad, and my, I'll think about it tomorrow, gene from my mom. Ms. Keene says we'll have a quiz the next day. I wish I had paid attention during class. I wish I were adopted. I wish David would quit sighing when I asked to copy his notes. 10 more lies they tell you in high school. 1. You will use algebra in your adult lives. 2. Driving to school is a privilege that can be taken away. 3. Students must stay on campus for lunch. 4. The new textbooks will arrive any day now. 5. Colleges care about more than your SAT scores. 6. We are enforcing the dress code. 7. We will figure out how to turn off the heat soon. 8. Our bus drivers are highly trained professionals. 9. There is nothing wrong with summer school. 10. We want to hear what you have to say. My life as a spy. Rachel Rochelle has lost her mind. She has flipped. She went to the movies with Andy Beast and her exchange friends, and now she follows after him, panting like a Bichon Frise. He wears her buddy, Greta Ingrid, draped around his neck like a white scarf. When he spits, I bet Rachel Rochelle catches it in a cup and saves it. Rachel Rochelle and some other twit natter about the movie date before Mr. Stettman starts class. I want to puke. Rachel Rochelle is just Andy this and Andy that. Could she be more obvious? I close my ears to her stupid, asthmatic laugh and work on the homework that was due yesterday. It is usually easy to do homework in class because Mr. Stettman's voice creates a gentle, white noise sound barrier. I can't do it today. I can't escape the arguments circling my head. Why worry about Rachel Rochelle? He'll hurt her. Had she done a single decent thing for me the whole year? She was my best friend through middle school. That counts for something. No, she's a witch and a traitor. She didn't see what happened. Let her lust after the beast. I hope he breaks her heart. What if he breaks something else? When class is over, I slide into the middle of the pack, pushing out the door before Mr. Stettman can bust me for the homework. Rachel Rochelle shoves past me to where Greta Ingrid and a short kid from Belgium are waiting. I tail them, always keeping two bodies between us like the detectives on television. They're on their way to the foreign language wing. That's no surprise. The foreign kids are always there, like they need to breathe air scented with their native language a couple times a day or they'll choke to death on too much American. Andy Beast swoops over their heads, folds his wings, and sets himself between the girls as they start up the stairs. He tries to kiss Greta Ingrid's cheek, but she turns away. He kisses Rachel Rochelle's cheek, and she giggles. He does not kiss the cheek of the short Belgian. The Belgian and the Swede wave ciao at the office of the foreign language department. Rumor has it that there's an espresso maker in there.
The friendly momentum keeps Rachel, Rochelle, and Andy walking all the way to the end of the hall. I face a corner and pretend to study algebra. I figure that's enough to make me unrecognizable. They sit on the floor, Rachel, Rochelle in a full lotus. Andy steals Rachel, Rochelle's notebook. She whines like a baby and throws herself across his lap to get it back. I shiver with goosebumps. He tosses the notebook from one hand to the other, always keeping it just out of her reach. Then he says something to her. I can't hear it. The hall sounds like a packed football stadium. His lips move poison and she smiles, and then she kisses him wet. Not a Girl Scout kiss. He gives her the notebook. His lips move. Lava spills out my ears. She's not any part of a pretend Rochelle chick. I can only see third-grade Rachel, who liked barbecue potato chips, and who braided pink embroidery thread into my hair that I wore for months until my mom made me cut it out. I rest my forehead against the prickly stucco. Thin atmosphere. The best place to figure this out is my closet, my throne room, my foster home. I want a shower. Maybe I should tell Greta Ingrid. My Swedish isn't good enough. I could talk to Rachel. Yeah, right. I could say I'd heard bad things about Andy. It would only make him more attractive. I could maybe tell her what happened. As if she'd listen. What if she told Andy? What would he do? There isn't much room for pacing. I take two steps, turn, two steps back. I bang my shin against the chair. Stupid room. What a dumb idea sitting in a closet like this. I flop in the chair. It whooshes out old janitor smells. Feet, beef jerky, shirts left in the washer too long. The turkey bone sculpture gives off a faint rotting odor. Three baby food jars of potpourri don't make a dent in the stink. Maybe there's a dead rat decomposing in the wall, right near the hot air vent. Maya Angelou watches me, two fingers on the side of her face. It is an intelligent pose. Maya wants me to tell Rachel. I take off my sweatshirt. My t-shirt sticks to me. They still have the heat running full blast, even though it's warm enough to crack open the windows. That's what I need, a window. As much as I complain about winter, cold air is easier to breathe, slipping like silver mercury down my lungs and out again. April is humid, with slush evaporating or rain drizzling. A warm, moldy washcloth of a month. The edges of my pictures curl in the damp. There's been some progress in this whole tree project, I guess. Like Picasso, I've gone through different phases. There's the confused period, when I wasn't sure what the assignment really was. The spaz period, when I couldn't draw a tree to save my life. The dead period, when all my trees looked like they had been through a forest fire or a blight. I'm getting better. Don't know what to call this phase yet. All these drawings make the closet seem smaller. Maybe I should bribe a janitor to haul all this stuff to my house. Make my bedroom more like this. More like home. Maya taps me on the shoulder. I'm not listening. I know, I don't want to hear it. I need to do something about Rachel. Something for her. Maya tells me without saying anything. I stall. Rachel will hate me. She already hates me. She won't listen. I have to try. I groan and rip out a piece of notebook paper. I write her a note, a left-handed note, so she won't know it's from me. Andy Evans will use you. He is not what he pretends to be. I heard he attacked a ninth grader. Be very, very careful. A friend. P.S. Tell Greta Ingrid, too. I didn't want the Swedish supermodel on my conscience either.
Growing pains. Mr. Freeman is a jerk. Instead of leaving me alone to find my muse, a real quote, I swear, he lands on the stool next to me and starts criticizing. What is wrong with my tree? He overflows with words describing how bad it sucks. It's stiff, unnatural, it doesn't flow. It is an insult to trees everywhere. I agree. My tree is hopeless. It isn't art. It's an excuse not to take sewing class. I don't belong in Mr. Freeman's room any more than I belong in the Martha's or in my little girl pink bedroom. This is where the real artists belong, like Ivy. I carry the linoleum block to the garbage can and throw it in hard enough to make everyone look at me. Ivy frowns through her wire sculpture. I sit back down and lay my head on the table. Mr. Freeman retrieves the block from the garbage. He brings back the Kleenex box, too. How could he tell I was crying? Mr. Freeman, you are getting better at this, but it's not good enough. This looks like a tree, but it is an average, ordinary, everyday, boring tree. Breathe life into it. Make it bend. Trees are flexible so they don't snap. Scar it. Give it a twisted branch. Perfect trees don't exist. Nothing is perfect. Flaws are interesting. Be the tree. He has this ice cream voice like a kindergarten teacher. If he thinks I can do it, then I'll try one more time. My fingers tip-tip over to the linoleum knife. Mr. Freeman pats my shoulder once, then turns to make someone else miserable. I wait until he isn't watching, then try to carve life into my flat linoleum square. Maybe I could carve off all the linoleum and call it empty block. If a famous person did that, it would probably be really popular and sell for a fortune. If I do it, I'll flunk. Be the tree. What kind of advice is that? Mr. Freeman has been hanging out with too many New Age weirdos. I was a tree in the second grade play because I made a bad sheep. I stood there with my arms outstretched like branches and my head drooping in the breeze. It gave me sore arms. I doubt trees are ever told to be the screwed up ninth grader. Gag order. David Petrakis's lawyer had a meeting with Mr. Neck and some kind of teacher lawyer. Guess who won? I bet David could skip class the rest of the year if he wanted and still get an A, which he would never do. But you better believe that whenever David raises his hand, Mr. Neck lets him talk as much as he wants. David, quiet David, is full of long, drawn-out, rambling opinions about social studies. The rest of the class is grateful. We bow down to the almighty David, who keeps the neck off our backs. Unfortunately, Mr. Neck still gives tests, and most of us fail them. Mr. Neck makes an announcement. Anyone who is flunking can write an extra credit report on a cultural influence at the turn of the century. He skipped the Industrial Revolution so he could drag our class past the year 1900. He does not want all of us in summer school. I don't want to see him in summer school either. I write about the suffragettes. Before the suffragettes came along, women were treated like dogs. Women could not vote. Women could not own property. Women were not allowed in many schools. They were dolls, with no thoughts or opinions or voices of their own. Then the suffragettes marched in, full of loud, in-your-face ideas. They got arrested and thrown in jail, but nothing shut them up. They fought and fought until they earned the rights they should have had all along. I write the best report ever. Anything I copy from a book, I put in quotes and footnotes. Feet note? I use books, magazines, articles, and a videotape. I think about looking for an old suffragette in a nursing home, but they're probably all dead. I even hand it in on time. Mr. Neck scowls. He looks down on me and says, "To get credit for the report, you have to deliver it orally, tomorrow, at the beginning of class." Me. Silence. No justice, no peace. There is no way I'm reading my suffragette report in front of the class. That wasn't part of the original assignment. Mr. Neck changed it at the very last second because he wants to flunk me or hates me or something. But I've written a really good report, and I'm not going to let an idiot teacher jerk me around like this. I ask David Petrakis for advice. We come up with a plan. I get to class early, when Mr. Neck is still in the lounge. I write what I need to on the board and cover the words with the suffragette protest sign. My box from the copy shop is on the floor. Mr. Neck walks in. He grumbles that I can go first. I stand, suffragette tall and calm. It is a lie. My insides feel like I'm caught in a tornado. My toes curl inside my sneakers, trying to grip the floor so I won't get sucked out the window. Mr. Neck nods at me. I pick up my report as if I'm going to read it out loud. I stand there, papers trembling as if a breeze is blowing through the closed door. I turn around and rip my poster off the blackboard where I have written, "The suffragettes fought for the right to speak. They were attacked, arrested, and thrown in jail for daring to do what they wanted. Like they were, I am willing to stand up for what I believe. No one should be forced to give speeches. I choose to stay silent." The class reads slowly, some of them moving their lips. Mr. Neck turns around to see what everyone is staring at. I nod at David. He joins me at the front of the room, and I hand him my box. David. Melinda has to deliver her report to the class as part of the assignment. She made copies everyone can read. He passes out the copies. They cost me $6.72 at the office supply store. I was going to make a cover page and color it, but I haven't gotten much allowance recently, so I just put the title at the top of the first page. My plan is to stand in front of the class for the 5 minutes I was given for my presentation. The suffragettes must have planned out and timed their protest, too. Mr. Neck has other plans. He gives me a D and escorts me to the authorities. I forgot about how the suffragettes were hauled off to jail. Duh. I go on a tour of the guidance counselor's office, principal principals, and wind up back in Miss. I am back to being a discipline problem again. I need a lawyer. I showed up every day this semester, sat my butt in every class, did some homework, and didn't cheat on tests. I still get slammed and miss. There's no way they can punish me for not speaking. It isn't fair. What do they know about me? What do they know about the inside of my head? Flashes of lightning, children crying. Caught in an avalanche, pinned by worry, squirming under the weight of doubt, guilt, fear. The walls in Miss are still white. Andy Beast isn't here. Thank God for small favors. A boy with lime-colored hair who looks like he's channeling for an alien species dozes. Two goths in black velvet dresses and artfully torn pantyhose trade Mona Lisa smiles. They cut school to stand in line for killer concert tickets. Miss is a small price to pay for row 10, seats 21 and 22. I simmer. Lawyers on TV always tell their clients not to say anything. The cops say that thing. Anything you say will be used against you. Self-incrimination. I looked it up. 3-point vocab word. So why does everyone make such a big hairy deal about me not talking? Maybe I don't want to incriminate myself. Maybe I don't like the sound of my voice. Maybe I don't have anything to say. The boy with the lime-colored hair wakes up when he falls out of his chair. The goth girls whinny. Mr. Neck picks his nose when he thinks we aren't looking. I need a lawyer. Advice from a smart mouth. David Petrakis sends me a note in social studies. Typed. He thinks it's horrible that my parents didn't videotape Mr. Neck's class or stick up for me the way his folks did. It feels so good to have someone feel sorry for me. I don't mention that my parents don't know what happened. They'll figure out what happened soon enough at the next meeting with the guidance counselor. I think David should be a judge. His latest career goal is to be a quantum physics genius. I don't know what that means, but he says his father is furious. His dad is right. David was made for the law. Deadly calm, turbocharged brain, and a good eye for weakness. He stops by my locker. I tell him Mr. Neck gave me a D for the suffragette report. David, he has a point. Me, it was a great report. You read it. I wrote a bibliography, and I didn't copy from the encyclopedia. It was the best report ever. It's not my fault Mr. Neck doesn't get performance art. David pauses to offer me a stick of gum. It's a delaying tactic, the kind that juries love.
David, but you got it wrong. The suffragettes were all about speaking up, screaming for their rights. You can't speak up for your right to be silent. That's letting the bad guys win. If the suffragettes did that, women wouldn't be able to vote yet.
I blow a bubble in his face. He folds the gum wrappers into tiny triangles.
David, don't get me wrong. I think what you did was kind of cool, and getting stuck in Miss wasn't fair. But don't expect to make a difference unless you speak up for yourself.
Me, do you lecture all your friends like this?
David, only the ones I like.
We both chew on this for a minute. The bell rings. I keep looking in my locker for a book that I already know isn't there. David checks his watch 100 times. We hear Principal bellow, "Let's move it, people!"
David, maybe I'll call you.
Me, maybe I won't answer. Chew, chew, blow, bubble, pop.
Maybe I will.
Is he asking me out? I don't think so, but he kind of is. I guess I'll answer if he calls. But if he touches me, I'll explode, so a date is out of the question. No touching. The Beast Prowls. I stay after school to work on my tree sketches. Mr. Freeman helps me for a while. He gives me a roll of brown paper and a piece of white chalk and shows me how to draw a tree in 3 sweeping lines. He doesn't care how many mistakes I make. Just 1, 2, 3. Like a waltz, he says, over and over. I use up a mile of the paper, but he doesn't care. This may be the root of his budget problem with the school board. God crackles over the intercom and tells Mr. Freeman he's late for a faculty meeting. Mr. Freeman says the kind of words you don't usually hear from teachers. He gives me a new piece of chalk and tells me to draw roots. You can't grow a decent tree without roots. The art room is one of the places I feel safe. I hum and don't worry about looking stupid. Roots. Ugh. But I try. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. I don't worry about the next day or minute. 1, 2, 3. Somebody flicks the lights off. My head snaps up. It is there. Andy Beast. Little rabbit heart leaps out of my chest and scampers across the paper, leaving bloody footprints on my roots. He turns the lights back on. I smell him. Have to find out where he gets that cologne. I think it's called Fear. This is turning into one of those repeating nightmares where you keep falling but never hit the floor, only I feel like I just smacked into the ground at 100 miles an hour. It. You seen Rochelle? Rochelle Bruin? I sit completely still. Maybe I can blend in with the metal tables and crumbling clay pots. He walks toward me, long, slow strides. The smell chokes me. I shiver. It. She's supposed to meet me, but I can't find her anywhere. You know who she is?
Me.
Silence. It sits on my table. Its legs smears my chalk drawing, blurring the roots into a mossy fog. It. Hello? Anyone home? Are you deaf? It stares at my face. I crush my jaws together so hard my teeth crumble to dust. I am a deer frozen in the headlights of a tractor trailer. Is he gonna hurt me again? He couldn't. Not in school, could he? Why can't I scream? Say something? Do anything? Why am I so afraid? Andy, I've been waiting outside. Rachel sweeps into the room wearing an artsy-fartsy gypsy scarf skirt and a necklace of eye-sized mirrors. She pouts, and Andy leaps off the table, ripping my paper, scattering bits of chalk. Ivy walks through the door, bumping Rachel accidentally. She hesitates. She has to feel that something is going on. Then she takes her sculpture off the shelf and sits at the table next to me. Rachel looks at me, but she doesn't say anything. She must have gotten my note. I mailed it over a week ago.
I stand up. Rachel gives us a half wave and says, "Ciao."
Andy puts his arm around her waist and pulls her close to his body as they float out the door.
Ivy is talking to me, but it takes a while before I can hear her.
"What a jerk," she says. She pinches the clay.